Hey folks!
Hello! Welcome to Wandering Into Wellness episode 5. So exciting. So, Finn, what are we talking about today?
Today, I think maybe we'll have a little chat about people going on their travels.
Ooh, holidays.
Yeah, the treks, the massive adventures, the family holidays in the sun, the whatever it is, the staycations down in good old West Kerry with your sandy sandwiches.
Nice.
Or whatever, you know.
And specifically the travel element? What can we do about travel? Or while we're away, how can you maintain health when you're abroad and you might be encountering different kinds of bugs?
Ooh, I can't pick. Let's do them both.
Okay. So, let's talk about plane travel first, because I think most people who are going on holidays in Ireland are trying to get sun.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah,
and,
indeed.
And especially this year.
Yeah, we're sitting here in Belgrave Square. It's like mildly cloudy. But, you know, I honestly want to wear less clothes just as soon as there's even the hint of, like, anything above 10 degrees.
Okay.
I won't, I promise.
Please don't strip right now. Plane travel.
Mm.
What are the dangers of plane travel as far as effects on your body?
So plane travel, there's a few. When you talk about any short-term plane travel, unfortunately there's an awful statistic that relates back to our exposure to radiation, that if we, each time we cross the Atlantic, it's equivalent to having a full old x-ray.
Wow.
So
that's a lot.
It's huge. It's really huge. And there's a very strong undercurrent, very strong but silent undercurrent of air flight stewards, what are they called these days? They're not stewards and stewardesses, is that right?
LBGYXQ,
I'm not sure. Oh dear, I think that might be a faux pas. Air stewardesses, stewardies. Anyway, those guys who have like some serious long-term health concerns, and I know a couple who are training actually in nutrition who are beginning to really pay attention to this, and there's, you know, obviously it poses such a massive risk to the whole air travel industry that they're not willing to talk about it in any great way. The exposure to radiation is a huge factor. So when we're talking about any sort of long-haul travel, one of the things we usually recommend is taking a high-potency antioxidant, something like a grapeseed extract or an alpha-lipoic acid or even an olive leaf extract or argan oil.
Let's break them down a little bit.
Okay.
What about... I know olive leaf extract and I know grapefruit seed extract. Mm. The other two I don't know. So let's talk about the two that I've heard about, and then maybe you can tell me some more about the other ones so I can learn about them.
So the reason why, so radiation damage, one of the things it does is it breaks down, helps to break down our DNA, essentially unravel our DNA. And once you start to unravel DNA, you get, it can lead to the growth of the wrong types of cells and cells not knowing what to do, and so it's unhealthy cell division essentially.
Okay.
So anything that helps in DNA protection, DNA repair is going to be useful.
And how does grapefruit, if you had to choose one,
mm-hmm.
what would be your go-to one that you would go for?
Actually, one, it's the most expensive of the lot, but it's brilliant. A liposomal glutathione, that would probably be the most.
And does that come in a powder or in a
In liposomal form, nutrients are really interesting because they're bound essentially in little fat cells, and it sort of fools your gut into thinking that they're able to go straight across into cells and into bloodstream without the usual processing through liver, etc. And so it means that you get them usually in kind of gooey gels.
Oh, yes, like the vitamin C one, the liposomal vitamin C that everyone's talking about now.
Yeah, exactly.
For skin health.
Of course, because it's beauty-oriented, suddenly it's a big deal. Yeah,
people are saying to me, so we could do facial yoga and we could learn all about facial yoga to help rejuvenate our skin. Or we could go and buy this really expensive liposomal vitamin C.
I'm not spending 2 minutes going, in the shower. Yeah.
Like, or both.
Or
why
both.
Do we have to do one and not the other?
Totally. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Our protocols are always kind of like, it has to come from the outside in first. In you know, it's one handy way, I suppose, that you can convert people into... adopting new routines. If you convert them based on the fact that, you know, you're not going to look younger, none of that sort of salesy BS, but by the same token you'll be protecting yourselves from damage and health, preventing or slowing down the signs of aging. I hate that. Oh, I feel like we're in a L'Oreal ad.
I feel that a lot is people always ask me for quotes on facial yoga and they go, you know, how about anti-aging? How is it anti-aging? Give me a good anti-aging quote. I don't want to say that. I'm just saying, no, I won't. For me, it's about aging with grace.
Wow, you put your foot down.
Yeah, well, those faces that you see that are beautiful, in my opinion, are the ones that show a beautiful a variety of expression that's happened through joy, that you can see pathways to joy on their face.
Yeah.
And I want to look like that when I'm older. I want
these
to
little
be,
gigs out here. Yeah, yeah, the smile lines.
Yeah, here and here. And I don't want to have no wrinkles. I don't want to look like I've never moved my face from laughing or smiling.
Yeah.
It's just I also want to be glowing at the same time. Yeah. So I'd like to glow and look like I've lived a life that's happy.
Me too, absolutely. I remember I went out with a girl in my 20s called Joanne. Hi, Joanne. And I've never met a girl who laughed more. And she was she really wanted these smile lines, like, was really, like, keen for them. And it was kind of, I suppose, too young to kind of get it at the time. It was kind of like, oh, really? You want wrinkles? But but it sort of, it stuck with me that. It's become something that I've really adopted in my own, you know, when I'm looking in the mirror, essentially, I'm like, this is a good thing. This is a reflection of a life well lived, which is a nice...
It is, and you see, when I used to teach in the Elbow Room, there was this amazing woman who used to practice yoga there, and she had this long grey hair to here, and she used to wear fuchsia pink tops and bright oranges, a turquoise earring, and she had this face of, I mean, it was just a thing of beauty, her face, and it really made you just stop and go, well, actually, that is what beauty is.
Yeah.
That is what I want to look like. I want to be her.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because her face was frozen and it wasn't moving and she'd taken all the things because she didn't want to be old. It's because she was living in her truth, going, this is my age and I am so happy in my age. I'm so happy to be here and I'm so loving my life. Yeah. And I think that's what attracts us to people, though, isn't it?
Sorry, we got runners jogging past them. They're pretty fast.
They are.
So, yeah, like, and if you want to see some of those faces, have you heard of a book by a guy called Turtle Bunbury called Vanishing Ireland?
No.
Oh, my God, it's magic. I know this is a total diversion from our topic, but anybody who's keen on seeing well-lived-in faces, the sort of characters where you can see the years that they've had etched on their face in a very attractive way. Oh, man, it's a beautiful, beautiful book called Vanishing Ireland. There's two series of them, actually, and each like there's a new person every page, every leaf, and they kind of explore a little bit of their life. And some of their lives are, you know, by context of our Instagram aspirational rubbish, quite ordinary.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, people who, there's one with two old sisters who live together, spinsters, who are like inherited the family farm. But they're amazing looking people, and I think it's a lovely thing to start to celebrate that, and we don't celebrate that enough in Western culture.
This is it, isn't it, though? It's all about aspiration at the moment and trying to get this lifestyle that people are wanting to look towards. And actually, when we think about yoga and we think about health and wellness, it's really about how can we be really happy with what we have.
Yeah.
How can we find beauty in the life that we
and
have right now
to and enjoying it more?
Yeah, yeah, and not be looking to what's the next thing, how can I get better, how
reverse.
Can I have more? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's about going, where am I at right now? What do I have? And let's focus on what's working right now and be so grateful for what we have. Because we also find that that love, that truth that's inside us, that we have so much already if we just focus on that and stop looking externally.
Big time, yeah.
Let's go back to plane travel. Right, so we were looking at cell damage DNA.
Yeah.
You were talking about the liposomal form.
Yeah.
And if people were wanting to get that, they can buy that from the health
store. So absolutely, there's a company called Altrium. There's a good few of them actually out there now. Altrium is the one that we stock now. Contains a little bit of xanthan gum, which I'm not a massive fan of. We'll talk about that on another podcast maybe. But it's a good way of getting it. The other thing that's obviously really important is blood oxygen levels. Our blood oxygen levels really drop. That's one thing. I mean, there's so many things. But blood oxygen levels really drop when you fly. And it's one of the things that can really help with recovery and recovering our circadian rhythm if we can support our blood oxygen level. And there's a few supplements that are helpful. There's a few protocols as well.
Before we go on to the protocols, can you just explain a little bit about circadian rhythms? Because that's a really interesting thing. And I think that disruption of the circadian rhythms in life, but also in travel, is a massive thing. And for people traveling with children, that's a huge worry when you're thinking about traveling long haul, is, are my children going to be up all night long?
Yeah.
And how are they going to recover to coming back? Because we as adults know, okay, I've traveled from here to here, and now everything feels weird. But as a child, we have no idea
what's happening.
Nighttime
is daytime, and daytime is nighttime, and what's going on.
So what is explain circadian rhythm
so
a little bit?
One of the most interesting quotes around this, I think, one of my favorite ones anyway, it said that our soul travels at the pace of a camel. So when you get to a new place, it takes a long time for us to readjust. And it's interesting because there's lots of studies that show that different animals, actually, camels, horses, humans, readjust at different rates. So humans are shown to adjust over about 4 days. Horses take, I think, 2 days. And so there's a lot of a lot of hormonal processes essentially that get thrown out of whack by travel, and our melatonin, which is the predominant hormone that our body produces in response to when the sun goes down, is essentially, it's thrown totally out of whack when we get into plane travel, to long haul flights.
And that's because our body is used to, say, 8 o'clock is our bedtime, and that's when it gets dark where we are, and then we arrive somewhere else, and our 8 o'clock is suddenly now 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and our routine is screwed. And also, when it comes to travel as well, there's a lot of cortisol production. Cortisol also massively throws out our melatonin and serotonin balance. So our circadian rhythm is really something that it's tough to readjust.
It's being attacked by many different aspects.
And imagine you're traveling for work. Maybe you're on the plane, getting a presentation ready to give to whatever your colleagues in New York, and you're expected to be switched on as soon as you get there, and you've done everything wrong to your body to allow you to perform at 100%, unfortunately. There's a few things, I suppose, to help to manage the cortisol level, to help to support blood oxygenation, and to get you kind of back into a state that your body's going to be able to inhabit that will feel like normal, I suppose.
And what would be your top 3 things for helping to balance those cortisol levels and your circadian rhythms when you get there? And are any of them applicable to younger people? Like children?
That's an interesting one. Definitely there are. Let's say, from a kid's point of view, managing their blood sugars, particularly in the few days up to the flight, that will make a huge difference.
And so what would that look like? How would you?
Let's say maybe you ate a little bit earlier in the evening, maybe you left breakfast a little bit later, maybe you didn't kind of like snack as often during the day while you were doing it.
To slowly shift towards what the new... Greece this summer with my little guy.
Oh, you're looking thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's the first time we've gone as a family on holiday abroad. We've gone to England, but we haven't gone to hot countries.
Right.
So we've already been thinking that, because as everyone now knows on this podcast, my child is not a child that loves to sleep that much. So I'm already anticipating and obviously Greece isn't a massive difference, but it still is a difference. And I was thinking, do I need to start moving him towards that time schedule in advance of that? Or do we get to Greece and just try and stick to whatever this is and get up at 6 and go to bed at 7,
Whatever protocol I set for you, I know it's not going to work because I know your kid.
Okay, so let's pretend.
Let's pretend that Ruben is
a kid that loves to sleep.
Sorry, excuse me, I'm mentioning his name. I would say the ideal thing, 2 hours of a time difference, I think, is what you have in Greece.
Yeah.
It's not huge, but it's still going to make a bit of a difference for his bedtimes, I suppose, alone. And if you can even, begin to, bring your dinner, actually before by 2 hours, actually, wouldn't it? Because you're going that away. You're not going that away.
This is not my area.
So
not
when we go west, the time goes back, and when we go east, the time goes forward.
Okay, good.
I don't think I'd be, as concerned for something like that. But let's say you were going like a couple hours further on, and maybe then I'd encourage you to maybe, put the kids to bed a little bit later, have dinner a little bit later in the evening, push breakfast out by a little bit as well, just for a week. It's amazing how quickly our biorhythms can really, get used to something, can adjust. Like, they just don't like the shock of something like plane travel when it hasn't had any warning for it whatsoever. So let's say that's one thing.
I suppose just from a yoga perspective, the pose, child's pose, the pose where it helps us to balance our melatonin levels and regulate them.
Nice.
So it might be something that people could do when their children, when they arrive in a country, and their children or them before bed, just to get into child's pose for a couple of minutes might help to bring that melatonin levels down. And that's a free thing that you could do, right?
Cortisol levels down.
To balance the melatonin levels.
Okay. Oh, right. Interesting.
It'll also bring cortisol levels down.
Stress levels, that was one bit. Cool. So of course, from an adult point of view, there are some lovely herbs that we can possibly try as well. And they're useful if you're traveling with the family. It's stressful anyway. So anything you can do to manage stress levels. Some of my favourites would be like rhodiola or ashwagandha, Siberian ginseng. People have probably come across those three. Possibly they haven't. If they haven't, I'd encourage them to, because I feel like adaptogenic herbs, which you're going to hear me talk about a lot in this podcast, they've evolved alongside our nervous system. They nearly always come from areas, let's take rhodiola for instance, comes from an area where it's very difficult for the plant to survive, and the plant develops a resilience, and weirdly that resilience confers to us when we consume it. Now that sounds very, esoteric and intangible, but there's a lot of studies then that show that it manages our blood oxygen levels, that it helps to modulate our cortisol production throughout the day. The really interesting one with rhodiola was in the Second World War, where it was used for shell shock with Russian troops. And that's how it, one of the ways it permeated into Western medical culture and developed interest in the West.
So just to bring that down to a slightly more basic level for those of us who don't have maybe your level of knowledge.
Okay.
An adaptogen is something that in its own capacity, when it's a plant or whatever, it's able to adapt to a variety of different tricky
survival situations, basically.
And then when it comes into our body, it enables us to adapt better.
Exactly.
Is that right?
That's basically it, which is kind of strange. We don't really fully understand. I mean, we know some of the active compounds within rhodiola. We know the active compounds in a lot of those plants. But we don't fully understand why they help us like that. But yeah, basically our limbic response, or our hormonal stress response, which is a roughly 2.5 million year old system and hasn't really adjusted to evolve alongside how quickly our world has evolved and our race, our human races has evolved in terms of how we live.
The speed of our life.
Yeah, exactly. And we end up in a situation where our body still thinks when we get an email from somebody that tells us, oh, you've forgotten to whatever, pay a bill and you're going to get your bins won't be collected, or an email from your boss saying that deadline, you forgot it. Your body essentially has the same response to that as if it just saw a dinosaur. It's exactly the same. Like, it, and there's no difference. And so our response to it, using adaptogens, actually engaging in physical work as well. So doing a workout as soon as you get to where you are after a long haul has been shown to be really helpful for adapting your circadian rhythm. So hitting the gym gently, but doing like a 15 or 20 minute HIIT workout, something that like exercises and gets adrenaline moving, that raises the heart rate, has been shown to really help your body to then adjust its
melatonin. And lymphatic drainage, I imagine, would play a part in that, because we tend to retain water, right?
That's a really big part of plane travel as well. A lot of people suffer from
edema.
Edema, exactly. What is it called? Deep vein thrombosis at its worst. Any sort of physical exercise, trampolining or whatever, helps in that movement of lymph around the body. It's one of the issues I suffer with as well. I have a huge problem with lymphatic drainage. Minor, I'm healthy, but it's something I'm aware of. And so if you use things like herbs like cleavers, burdock, calendula, those herbs are all really useful to help to support that lymphatic drainage. And then also you know there's other herbs that might be useful from a venous support point of view as well. So
that's
people
like horse chestnut, isn't it?
But well done. Look
I work
you,
in pregnancy.
On. Yeah, of course.
So
okay, yeah, I know.
Varicose veins.
I know you got your knowledge.
Kind of
you
stuff.
Got you. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like exactly. So horse chestnut for varicose veins, exactly. So it helps as it's tannin rich and it helps to tone the veins. So supports blood return from the lower parts of the limbs and that sort of stuff. And other ones like yarrow would be useful for that. And actually grapeseed extract, also useful for that as well. So
grapeseed extract we need to talk about, because it also has brilliant benefits for protecting us. Say you were going somewhere like India and you might be exposed to all sorts of tummy bugs.
Grapefruit seed extract versus grape seed. Oh,
you're saying grape
seed.
They're
two different things.
Interesting. Well, we need to cover both.
Totally,
so
we do. Oh, God.
So talk about grape seed.
So grape seed extract essentially.
Because I don't think I've ever understood. Maybe I've always felt like someone's just either I'm saying it wrong or someone's saying it wrong and not really understanding that there's two separate ones.
Okay.
The one I know is the grape seed extract.
Okay, so grape seed extract, to deal with that first, is really anthocyanin rich. So anthocyanins are those things, the pigments that colour like blueberries and blackberries and all the dark purple and
acai,
as we found out this morning. We had a great acai bowl morning. Anyway, let's not gloat. Those anthocyanins are really a powerful preventative for venous leakage. So they help to shore up the veins and the arteries and prevent blood leaking and hematomas and all the things that would be associated with deep vein thrombosis or that sort of stuff. So,
and are they counterindicated for anything? Are there some people that shouldn't take them?
That I know of, no. But in all honesty, this is a health and wellness podcast. We are not going to get into giving recommendations that are designed to replace your doctor. So anybody who has any prior existing condition, and we're speaking about any herb, any nutrient, make sure you go to your doc and make sure that they approve it first. Your prescribing pharmacist even might be more appropriate, because sometimes they're used to dealing with the two ends, with nutrients, with herbs, with prescription drugs as well.
But in general, it's an easy one to take. It hasn't got
it's
massive.
It's pretty inert. Like a lot of the nutrients that we'd sell, there's not a lot of things that they interact with from a drug point of view. You know, I don't know of any contraindications to hypertension or high blood pressure. Like, let's say you weren't medicated, I've never seen negative effects and never heard of them.
So that's average. Hopefully your average.
Yeah,
listener.
Fingers crossed. I think so. Jeepers. Like, most of us are alive, so that's good.
So that's great. Seed extract.
So grapefruit seed extract. At the other end, this is a really important area as well that we probably should cover. So when you get to, let's say, areas of the world where you're told that you shouldn't, you know,
drink water.
Yeah, exactly, or get ice cubes in your drinks or whatever. One of the things you can bring along with you, which is a really good way to help to as an insurance policy to prevent any infection, is grapefruit seed extract. So I don't recommend people using that in the long term.
No.
Grapefruit seed extract has a little bit of ammonia chloride based on the extraction method, and that's not great for our the lining of our gut. It can be quite an irritant, and yeah, it's a bit of a toxin. So in the short term, though, it's amazingly helpful because it wipes out bugs in your drinks. So it's a great way to help to, you know, give you some guarantee, some insurance that...
And would you suggest, my tip on that, and you'll probably tell me that I'm wrong on this, but...
No,
just from a point of view of it being maybe more effective, but I've taken it in the liquid drop form, and I've also taken it in the tablet form, and the drops are beyond revolting.
Yeah.
And the tablets are really easy. So for me, I always used to take the tablets because they were so easy to take on travel, but I imagine you're going to say that the drops are more effective.
Yeah, defo. Yeah, really. Particularly if you're putting in at your water and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, without a doubt. It's just the ability for something to... So let's imagine you have a sore throat and you take something in a capsule. That capsule only obviously breaks down in your gut. So it can only deal with a certain area once the capsule is broken down and the contents have gone into your, like, dispersed into your digestive tract. So a liquid is always going to be more useful in this situation anyway, because it's, you know, coating your gut all the way down, and it's involving itself in all the kind of like bacteria, whatever that might or might not be in the water.
And presumably it's hitting the water immediately and having some effect.
Have some effect immediately before it gets in.
And what would your recommended thing be when you take it with you, say you're in India and you're there? Would you be putting it in every drink that you have? Would you be taking it once a day? Would you be taking it... it something that you wait until you're sick, or is it something you use as a preventative?
It's probably a preventative. So let's say I would take three supplements as a preventative. I would take the grapefruit seed extract, I'd take Saccharomyces boulardii, and I'd take activated charcoal. Those are like three, like, core first aid preventative, in this case, remedies when you're traveling to a country where food is going to be coming from unknown origins, you're going to eat street food or whatever. I think I'd have difficulty avoiding eating that stuff. It looks too tasty.
It does.
It smells too good. And in that case, yeah, definitely those, all of those three. That, so say Saccharomyces boulardii is a probiotic yeast, and it helps to expel candida. Competes very effectively with other pathogenic bacteria in the gut and pathogenic yeast, and really works to serve to support the gut flora when you're in an environment where you're not sure what you're getting in your food. Activated charcoal is a little bit different. Activated charcoal is, like, I think the earliest reference to this, or when it was popularized in medical circles, was when it was used in those old theatrical medical demonstrations. You used to see one of the guys were demonstrating the lobotomies, and there'd be like 300 doctors around in an auditorium scribbling down their notes, and the guy's screwing into his head. So basically a doctor did that with activated charcoal, and he took enough arsenic apparently to kill something like an elephant, and then chased it with a bunch of activated charcoal, and he stood there and 5 minutes later he wasn't dead, and everyone
applauded. Really?
So it's a powerful pathogen binding ability, but it binds everything. So it binds nutrients in the gut as well, and so somewhat similar to grapefruit seed extract, we wouldn't recommend it for long-term use. It's amazing to support you where you've unpredictable food in your environment. Let's say you're getting bloating or distension or the kind of symptoms of IBS, where they're acute, or where you're out at night and you're kind of, you can't really, you know, just be at home, and you want to be able to survive and hang out with your friends or whatever it is.
Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, exactly. They're a great, like, it works on a moment. It works really well. Like,
it kind of absorbs like excess wind, right?
Yeah,
takes that out and just makes it a bit more comfortable. And if you were to have, say you were in India and you got a tummy bug, would you be taking your activated charcoal once the bug was in your system as a helping thing as well?
Yeah, and I'd probably be taking it in between meals as well. I wouldn't take it alongside the food necessarily, because it binds the nutrients from the food, but I'd take it like in between, and as soon as you get unwell, the nice thing with activated charcoal, because it's very inert, all it's doing is binding, you can take quite a lot of it. It can have a mild constipating effect when you take whomping amounts of it, but 6 to 10 capsules I would happily lower. Likewise, the Espolardi.
And it's black, right?
Yeah, it's black,
so. And how does that look when it comes out the other end?
It looks pretty dark.
Do you need to know that? Because I think...
I suppose.
Might you get a fright if you just...
If you took a huge amount, yeah. I mean...
But just normal capsules, you wouldn't see it?
Not hugely, no. It wouldn't make a massive difference.
Not like beetroot.
No, it's not. Or like asparagus for your
week. Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise it could be quite terrifying if you just...
For sure.
Didn't realise.
Like, what went wrong? Should I call the doctor?
It's black.
I feel fine.
Yeah. Okay, so we've done... We talked about... We were on the plane... We want to look after our cells. Mm. We want to look after our DNA. We've talked a little bit about edema. Maybe we can add some extra stuff in there about lymphatic drainage. Mm. Are there any physical things that you can do to help lymphatic drainage on the plane? Let's look at that. So exercises, maybe. Well, you'll know that you should be doing exercises on the plane.
Yeah.
Ankle circles. Yeah. A really good one, because loads of the places that people tend to get edema is around the ankles, around the feet, because obviously you're sitting up and the blood is pooling down with gravity into your feet. So just coming up onto your tiptoes and then back down onto your heel is a really good one. What I usually do is go to the back of the plane where the people who look after us in the air are.
Those people are remaining nameless because we haven't a clue what to call them safely.
Stews. Just put your hand on the wall and just come up and down on your ankles and take your ankles into every position. So turn your feet out and come up, bring them to the front, come up, put them to the other side, come up, up and down. Do that kind of thing. And even just picking up your foot towards your bottom and stretching it there so you get that calf stretch.
Cool.
Any of the yoga poses, you know, like tree pose, all those things you can just do against the wall.
Every
30 minutes is a good thing, because what you're doing then is you're flushing that blood flow back up and down and you're supporting those veins. Mm-mm. So any areas that you tend to have stagnation, any areas that are a little bit blocked for you, you're just giving the legs a chance to flush that blood back up to the areas that we need it. And then also, I imagine it's going to come into the belly, into the areas that maybe are suffering a little bit from sitting and from being compressed.
Yeah.
And just give them that little bit of extra blood flow.
Okay, and what? Let's imagine you're stuck in your seat and you've got three people.
Get out.
Yeah, you haven't got an aisle seat, you don't feel like interrupting somebody every half hour. What is there anything
so there's
you can
a lot
do
of chair
sitting?
Yoga that you can do.
Go for it. I can hang on to this.
take it slowly. I tried to do it. It didn't work. We'll know it now. We'll have
a cue. Yeah, exactly. This is a microphone, everybody, just in case we're not passing anything. All
right. On a park bench.
it does seem weird.
So chair yoga is a really good one for that. You can't probably see my legs, but one of the things you can do is take your ankle up.
You can make it so you see your legs. Let's see.
Over your knee.
Legs.
That you come across like that, and you just have your ankle sitting across your knee. And if you're really tight, your knee might be here, and if you're really open, your knee might be lower. And you can just reach up on the inhale and exhale, fold forward so that you let your head hang. And you should feel that stretch right through the side of your glute medial, the corner of your bum muscles, and also through your outer hips. So that kind of thing is really, really good. You can literally just stretch your legs out straight on the floor and forward bend over your legs, so you just reach down to touch your toes and come back up. And then you can do all of your shoulder stretches. So a lot of our lymphatic points are up here, and we want to look after our heart health and our lung health, and stuff gets stuck around here. So all of the things where you just round out the chest, bring the arms up over the head, fold to the side, fold to the other side. All of these simple things, shoulder circles are really good. And then getting into the joints. So in yoga, we think about the dance of the joints. And when we're thinking about lymphatic drainage, we really want to think about every joint in our body. So when you're sitting there, you could think about, where are my joints, right? So we've done ankles. Mm-hmm. We've done hips a little bit. We've done a knee when we're doing this. But we can just place your hands behind the knees and get little knee circles. That's
and you also have lymphatic nodules in there, lymph nodes right in behind it.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the time, that's where we get our varicose veins, especially when you're pregnant. So I imagine that's the same on planes as well. But what up here, all of these circles where we reach round here, we can cross our arms, stretch there. But we can also do a little...
Say hello to your neighbour. Shake hands.
And we can do little massages. So we just down the outside of the arm, up the inside of the arm. And we can do down the outside of the leg and then back up. So we always want to go towards the direction of the heart.
Yes.
So you want to do both sides, and then you can tap up your belly and down your chest.
Brilliant.
And just that stimulates the movement of the leg through the body there. So that's something, even if you had very small movement, or if you were someone who really suffered with tightness, if you were stuck in your chair, even just doing those tapping massages, we can all reach down part of our legs and back up again a couple
of
times would be really good.
I love it. So if anybody here is listening on iTunes and not watching on YouTube, come over to YouTube and check that out.
Yeah, that's true.
That's brilliant. Nice one. What else do you find, like, as a mum, if you're travelling, are there any particular routines that you like to employ that you find are useful for, I mean, obviously this is your first real travel with Ruben, but are there any things that you've got practice in terms of, like, getting snacks ready for the plane? And I've got one mum who's a mate of mine who's got three kids. Hello, Ruth. She's in Atlanta. Poor old Ruth. Poor old me. I don't get to see her. When she travels, she is such a tough mummy, like, in terms of managing to get all of the snacks together. Like, it's amazing. And amazing your kids go for the snacks as well.
It depends. I think it depends definitely what your child's eating habits are and what they will reach for. I'm lucky in that Ruben is really good at eating vegetables and fruits and those kinds of things. But we do really, he is someone who reacts very quickly to sugar, and so we do need to limit sugar. And obviously when you're in the airport, it's so easy to reach for those things that are processed, and they all have hidden stuff in them. So what we try to do when I'm traveling is, there are a few go-to snacks that I make that I find really helpful. There's a sweet potato cookie, where you just roast about 150 grams of sweet potatoes in the oven, and scoop out the flesh from the inside of that and mash it up and let it cool. And then you mix that with, I think it's about 100 of flour and 100 of butter.
Okay.
And if you don't use butter, you can use coconut oil. But like an organic grass-fed butter is a nice one. Because it has all those healthy fats in there as well. So you get that nice sustained energy. Good to have it with the carbohydrates there. And you just mix them all up in a bowl till it forms a dough. And you can add little bits of more or less, but till it forms a dough that you can roll out. And then you can make cookies, which is kind of fun to do to get the kids involved in that preparation of it. And then they're more likely to eat
it as well. It's the one trick. I'm amazed. No, I'm not a parent, so I can't speak to parents in this way, but I'm going to speak to parents in this way. At how many parents don't think of, I guess because they're rushed, they're thinking, okay, if I get my three-year-old involved, the place is going to be a nightmare. It'll be like an art studio, so maybe I'll just get it done quickly myself. But if you involve them in the process, if you can in any way, it's amazing how they'll invest and suddenly try the stuff. Like when they're handed anything, there's like this immediate mistrust with the food. Where did it come from? Whose is it? But then they take, the opposite happens when they're even, like, even they're chopping the head off the broccoli. You know, so like, oh, that's the broccoli I made, you know? And it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you feel so, they feel so proud of themselves that they made it. And I think then they can choose, you could make stars, or you can make gingerbread men, and you can make those sweet potato cookies sweeter if you want by adding a little bit of honey, by adding cinnamon, by adding allspice to make them look like a gingerbread cookie. But they're really delicious, and ultimately they take the place of a sandwich. If you're a family that doesn't eat bread like us, it's hard because normally you'd pack sandwiches and you can't do that. So they're really good for that. And then there's a woman who has this amazing website called Baby-Led Feeding. She's an Irish woman.
We'll maybe post her on her Instagram.
We will. We'll post a link to her. And she has the best recipes. They're all really quick, all really healthy. And she makes these cookies which are made with nut butter. So you need to be a nut person. But nut butter, oats, and bananas. And it's a base recipe like that. You just blend it all up together. And then you make a little hole in the middle and put your own homemade chia jam in there. And then you cook them in the oven. And they look like a jam cookie. But they've got, you've got your banana for sustained energy, potassium, magnesium. Magnesium's good for sleep, right? So that's good if you're traveling on the plane. You've got all your nuts for sustained energy. You've got the healthy fats. You've got oats, which is also really good for sleep. And then you've got your fruits, so you've got that vitamin C hit. So if you're exposed to those bugs on the plane, you're getting that little bit of vitamin C that can help to protect you from those bugs. So those are really good ones, I think. And then we like to do tamari roasted pumpkin seeds. And he loves them. So you just simply get pumpkin seeds in a tray, put tamari on them, and then roast them.
We'll post the recipe in case anyone can't grasp it.
But there's a million. If you look on Pinterest, you can just get a million different recipes. You can do honey and lemon ones. They last really well in airtight containers. And pumpkin seeds are mega. What have they got in them?
Iron, lots of zinc.
They're great for cortisol regulation.
Are they? Really? That's interesting. I wonder what aspect of that does that. Because they're also great for prostate health.
They're really good in the management of stress and blood sugar levels.
I didn't know about that. I bet stress can have to look that one up.
And they're also good for parasites, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure they are. And most seeds have little like toxins in them, essentially, that are designed to help to prevent the seed from spoiling when it's trying to germinate. So that's why grape seed extract, grapefruit seed extract, all of these seed extracts have these kind of powerful, you know, health promoting properties when used in the right way. So yeah, pumpkin seeds, I guess, in the same
So that'd be my three. But if you head on, her name's Eileen Cox Burnell, the woman whose blog about it, and she's just got the best recipes. But if you can just pack a little bundle of those things when you're traveling, it really does make it easier, because A, you're not spending so much money, which is also helpful if you're traveling on holiday.
Massive.
But just having your little ones a little bit more regulated helps everyone on the plane.
Oh my god, helps everyone. Not just the mothers and fathers, but like the other people are grumbling down in the front seats. That's gas. So in wrapping this up, I suppose, a little bit, because we've been chatting for ages, but are there any particular places that you have either on your list of been to's, any bucket list places that you want to tell anyone about?
Traveling to.
Yeah, because you grew up kind of traveling anyway. Okay, let's. Okay, where make it the ideal world. Let's forget.
Where I would really like to go is Mongolia. That's the place that I really want to go. I wanted to go there in my gap year. I have a thing for yurts. I absolutely love yurts. I know, but they're so beautiful, and they're these spaces that they're just so natural in their in their shape. They just automatically are inclusive.
Yeah, they encourage shit. Who wants a corner?
Exactly, especially when you have kids. They encourage conversation. Mm. They often have those beautiful fabrics, and and yeah, just the Mongolian way of life is a totally interesting thing. And those that space, that the reason that we wanted to do this podcast outside is because being out in space, being able to stretch your eye, encourages conversation.
Yeah,
encourages free thought. And I think our bodies just get so trapped in the small spaces that we're in, and this thing that you're talking about of how we haven't really adapted to modern life. Mm. Part of that is that we used to be in vast open spaces, huge periods of time, and we had the chance to stretch the eye, we had the chance to stretch our body, to stretch our ideas and think of things and walk more and physically move our body. And, and I love that idea of going on those trains and traveling to those places.
Any particular things in Mongolia other than yurts and trains? What? They're amazing horse culture, aren't
they? Well, I'm really interested in their horse culture. They actually drink the milk of their horses, in fact. The Przelski horses.
Wow. Is that, I wonder, is that, have you heard of A1 and A2 milk? That
I
whole
have
thing?
Not.
Okay, because there's a whole thing around the allergenic nature of milk of dairy, that a lot of it might be to do with this particular type of protein, either an A1 protein or A2 protein. And so a lot of cultures that drink, say, camel milk or donkey milk, those all happen to be A2 milks.
Oh, interesting.
As with some Irish breeds like Moyles and not Holstein Friesians, essentially, not the ones that are used for all the dairy production that goes on in the West, in Europe and in America. And so people are beginning to breed in A2 protein kind of bloodlines into their herds, so they're getting more A2 protein, and people find that it makes for a lot less of an allergenic response to the dairy.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because more of that, please.
Yeah, totally.
For those of us that have trouble with dairy,
big
more
time,
of that.
Absolutely, just a bit of an awareness of it, and it's pretty solid science.
I think herd living is so interesting, you know, just that they still have that element of culture that's really natural, that's really nomadic, that's moving, you know, living with those seasons, with those natural rhythms, and moving from place to place, and they use all of the animals, you know, nose to tail, when they're eating, and they really respect the animals, they ride on their animals, they drink the milk from their animals, and that's a beautiful thing, and I'd love for my son to see that aspect of living, and just the space, and the scenery really.
Yeah, kind of like the what's the area that they live in? The steppes.
Steeps?
I don't know. I nearly come from there, you should know. that's not fair. But yeah, it's almost intimidating the amount of space that's there, isn't it? It's huge.
Yeah,
like
huge.
It's a vast country.
Yeah.
For the same reason, talking about that culture, I went to Morocco a couple of years ago, but Berber culture has always really fascinated me. Again, a nomadic culture where, wow, it's so. Like, I'm actually addicted to, if anybody knows Tin Arriwen or some of those other kind of Berber music groups, and they play, there's something really intoxicating about the culture in itself. I can't explain what it is necessarily. They're, you know, I've never spoken to a Berber, apart from the bits I did in Morocco, but I didn't really experience the culture massively. But there's something very entrancing about the kind of the pace at which they live, this nature, which they stay at a place where, you know, there is an abundant resource for food, and they can water their animals, and they set up their tents, their Bedouin tents or Berber tents, and then they kind of, like, after 2 months they up sticks and move on. And it's, you know, I think we've come to put the ideas of, you know, traveler or gypsy culture into a box that's not positive at all, and there's something really beautiful aspirational about that end of it, but it clashes very, very poorly when it comes into contact with Western culture. It needs that space.
I think we've had this encouragement of needing to put down roots, to needing to stay and accumulate stuff.
People who don't do that in a weird way.
We really find it difficult, and it comes back to that thing we were talking about this week about how important it is to move from comfort into courage, to challenge the habitual, challenge the routines. And all the studies show that for mental health and well-being, it's really important to step outside our comfort zone every so often, to just change small habits, like walk to work a different way, choose a different country to go to on holiday, not the same one every time.
I know. I can't imagine a routine around summer holidays. Sorry, I'm just one of those people who, if I've been there, I don't tick it off. It's not like an achievement thing, but like I don't necessarily find there's too many other places to visit.
Maybe if you have children,
explore country.
Maybe
okay.
It's going to feel different. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. There's predictability there.
Maybe there's, you know, the place.
Yeah.
They feel comfortable there.
Yeah,
you know it's set up for them. There's a perfect beach. I can understand that. But every time you go to somewhere new, you're exposing yourself to all these new experiences.
Yeah.
And new bacteria for gut health.
True.
That's important, isn't it? The more diverse your gut health is.
Debatable.
Well,
really debatable.
I listened to a very interesting talk on that recently, and they were saying that in the old days we had like a vast exposure to way more because we were traveling nomadically. We were eating different herbs, we were eating different vegetables, we were being exposed to different bacteria through the earth.
Yeah.
And then now we're staying in this one place, and often we're taking same probiotic and we're like overpopulating one area and not having the diversity that we used to have.
I fully, like, it makes sense, and it's something that it would have been something I would have been espousing for the last whatever 10-15 years. But there's interesting studies that are coming through now where they're, you know, evacuating all of the flora out of mice in this situation, and finding incredible like modulation in terms of immune response to, you know, to not to pathogenic disease but to autoimmune conditions. And I think that we've evolved. We were a species who used to have to deal with a huge amount of pathogens, and in that case, yes, if you have pathogens, you definitely want to have bacterial diversity in your gut because you've got all these kind of residual responses to them. But if you have a pathogen-free, or like we are, like in this kind of hyper-clean hygiene hypothesis-driven, you know, kills 99% of germs sort of culture. Actually, our body doesn't respond that well when we have an excess. And that's why a lot of nutritional therapists and functional medicine people are, you know, seeing people come into their clinics who are saying, well, I was suffering from asthma and my friend said try kefir, and things get out of control. And then they do a stool analysis and they look at these bacteria in their gut that aren't even coming up on the assays, like as in the laboratories haven't seen them before.
Really?
Do you know, so there's a lot of playing around there, which I think is maybe not totally helpful. I love the instinct that people have to go towards ferments and to get diversity, and it does instinctively make sense. But I think the jury's definitely out on whether that makes sense in a Western culture where we're not dealing with so much of a pathogen response. We actually need to have a more modulated immune response. We actually need to dampen it as opposed to enhance it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and it is an experience that I had with probiotics, and we'll talk about that another time, but how I used to feel about probiotics versus how I feel about them now, and experiences my little family have had with it, and conventional wisdom. I think now it's very easy. People everywhere you meet, people just go, oh, take a probiotic.
Yes.
And I'm not sure now, where I used to be saying that to people, now I'd be a little bit more hesitant to look at your specifics in your gut.
Yeah, big time.
That's a different topic. But just to round up for people, if they were to take a home healing from home toolkit with them on holiday, their health toolkit, what is the top one that we would take? Let's just recap. So the top one you would take for prevention of DNA damage on flights?
Probably glutathione, followed closely by, go on.
And that can be got in the health food store.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, most healthy stores. If you can't, it's an expensive one. That's the only problem. Budget's always an issue for everybody, for all of us. But if it's a real issue, then maybe looking at something like grapeseed extract, or alpha lipoic acid. Some of them are out there that are maybe a little bit cheaper. And just getting the diversity of dark coloured fruits and veg that those contain those types of antioxidants as well, like resveratrol and these things that are going
so
to also
snacking on blueberries on the plane
all the time. Yeah, good. In fact, yeah, absolutely.
Dark berries.
Yeah,
that
big time
kind of thing.
And
so then the three things that we would take for gut health when you get there is activated charcoal
and Saccharomyces
boulardii
and your favorite grapefruit seed
extract.
Yeah.
So those are the three for that. Mm-hmm. What we haven't talked about a little bit that I always use, I don't know how you feel about this on the plane, is like a nasal spray, protects
I forgot
the
colloidal
linings.
Silver. Whoops.
Yes, right.
Massive,
so we always have colloidal
issue.
Silver to spray on our hands, on ourselves, to protect bugs that we're encountering in the plane. You can even spray it in your mouth.
Yeah.
And
use it as a toner. It's lovely as a spritz.
And it's also good when you're away. If you've got a cut, you can spray that in. So it's like a first aid, like an antiseptic cream.
It's a great
type thing.
First aid, yeah.
It's really good. But having a spray up your nose, because a lot of the way that we get bacteria on the plane is the mucous membranes in our nose dry out, cracks, and in those micro cracks, stuff gets in. So sometimes people talk about putting Vaseline. I'm not a big Vaseline person, but you can get a spray from Victoria Health. Is a really good place.
Cool. Yeah,
they have a really good travel nasal spray that has no nasties in it.
Nice.
And that's really good for long haul flights
to help protect mucous membranes.
And just to stop you from getting sick, because obviously there's so much recycled air in the plane.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big problem.
So that's a big one. And then we were talking about lymphatic drainage. What was the supplement for that?
So the big three herbs would be calendula, cleavers, and possibly burdock. There's a bunch of herbs that all have kind of lymphatic drainage effects, but those would be the kind of the three that I focus on most. And you can use them as teas or tinctures.
And then sleep, for helping sleep?
So for sleep deprived, okay, so blood oxygenation is one of the things that helps support, and we didn't really get into those supplements. Grape seed extract has an effect on it, but without throwing too many things at people, let's say olive leaf extract or what's called cherry active, which is a sour cherry extract.
Yeah.
That really helps with blood oxygenation levels. One of the girls who used to work for us, ladies, Mayumi, a Japanese lady, when she would go home, she would always trial these, because in the Japanese airports, they actually test your, you can test your blood oxygen level when you come off the plane.
Wow.
And so she would trial all these bits of olives. It was great. Every year she went home, and we were like, what will you take this year? And so she found that actually both of those, in fact, all three of them, but particularly I think she found that olive leaf extract was the most effective of all of them.
Okay, and that also is really good for if you're sick.
It's a great first aid one.
First
yeah,
aid.
Exactly. It's antimicrobial, and it also helps to support our own innate immune response as well. So it does some work for the immune system, helps the immune system to do more work as well.
And more of that, isn't it? The more we want our body to give our body the tools to kick into its innate healing mechanism.
Big
rather than putting things in that do that job
yeah.
for us. We want to come back to that healing from our own body and those mechanisms that are there in place already.
Bang on. Cool.
Okay.
All right. We've covered loads.
So happy holidays, everyone.
Yeah.
And let us know how you get on. And if you have any tips yourselves that are your favourites, your family favourites, any movements that are good for the plane, any natural healing tips or supplements, please comment in the comments below.
Yeah, absolutely. And then so always every episode we'll be giving away a goodie bag full of nice bits from my shop, the Hop Sack.
All those snacks, those healthy snacks that you can use on the plane. So this will be a particularly good one if you are going somewhere soon. Contact us.
Yeah, pop in your comments, your suggestions, like and subscribe if you wouldn't mind, both on iTunes and YouTube. That all helps to kind of get the word out there and helps us to do more of what we like, which is sharing a bit of this health and wellness knowledge.
Exactly.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a million, Ed.
Thanks, Deli.
Bye.